Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Live from Studio S, it's Isaac Constance for WKAR's Current Sports. Not Al Martin today. He's still out in L.A. doing a conference over there, but he will be back in the studio in the seat on Monday. However, today is busy. I can't wait to get cracking because we have two guests, both live, both in studio. James Edwards III will join us, a Lansing State Journal high school sports writer and contributor for The Athletic, a new website out of Detroit and other cities. He covers the Pistons time to time for them. And Jesse Goldberg Strassler, the play-by-play voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. He'll also be on the show to describe the wrap-up of the season for the Lugnuts. Big things coming, and of course the Lugnuts having lost two of the top prospects in the Toronto Blue Jays farm system, have had to make some adjustments. We'll talk to him about that, as well as what we can look forward to for the final stretch of the regular season. Before that, even though, I want to rewind because something big happened yesterday at Little Caesars Arena. LCA starting to feel like home for the Detroit Red Wings. That's right. I'll tell you what that is and the tradition behind it as well, why it's so significant, as well as the Detroit Lions heading into their second preseason game tomorrow night. Big day for the Lions and big day to validate some of the hype surrounding one Detroit Lion who's getting tons of publicity, that being Kenny Golladay, of course. We'll see if he can keep it up and why I think he's for real. The hype's justified even after just one game. And then a report from ESPN insiders say that LeBron is 100% gone from Cleveland after this upcoming year. What factors weigh into that decision? Is it true in the first place? Is he actually already have his mind set on leaving? We'll discuss that and so much more. If you want to weigh into the show today, call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527, or you can tweet me at Isaac Constance or the show at WKAR_sports. We're also live on Facebook right now. You can go to Facebook.com/currentsports. We are live streaming right there. You can hear us from there. And there are so many ways to keep up. So, hey, let's keep on going on this edition of Current Sports. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. Little League baseball team from Grosse Pointe Woodshore, Michigan, participated in their first game of the Little League World Series yesterday. Of course, the nationwide event is broadcasted live on ESPN. But for an opener, it didn't go so well as Wood Shores dropped their first game to a team from Lufkin, Texas by a score of 5-0. A solo homer from Colin Ross opened the scoring for Lufkin in the bottom of the first. Then a 4-run fourth inning from Lufkin officially put the game out of reach. Though Grosse Pointe Wood Shores lost, their LLWS run is not over just yet. They will face the Mid-Atlantic champ, Sioux Falls, at 3 p.m. on Saturday in the loser's bracket. Michigan State Athletic Director Mark House has been named one of the nation's top athletic directors in the nation. To be exact, he was voted second best in the nation by 15 media members, according to a survey conducted by Sports Illustrated college football beat reporter Bruce Feldman. Feldman started the project about a year ago and conducted two anonymous surveys, one with 15 media members who cover college sports, and the second with 10 ADs. I was one of those. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not a media member who was interviewed, I promise you. Feldman says he asked two questions of each group. What factors determine how effective these folks are at their jobs, and who are the best three ADs in the biz? He gave 3 points for a first place vote, 2 for a second place vote, and 1 point for a third place vote. House received 15 points. The top AD, one atop him, got 16. Speaking of MSU, with the acquisition of Xavier Tillman and Jaren Jackson Jr. this offseason, Michigan State men's basketball propelled themselves into the national spotlight as national championship favorites, and as a result, the national media has begun to catch on. According to CBS Sports writer Matt Norlander, Michigan State had one of the top five best off-seasons in the nation, along with Duke, USC, LSU Go Tigers, and Missouri. In his explanation on MSU's successful off-season, Norlander wrote, "While the sport will have a lot of star power next season, Bridges, who is prone to power dunk a few times every game, is as much watch as anyone. And he's part of a fearsome sophomore foursome, flanked by point guard Cassius Winston, wing Josh Langford, and center Nick Ward. As a result, the Spartans will be a consensus preseason top five team and a national title contender." Beyond that, Sparty was able to keep ace assistant Dane Fife, who turned down the Duquesne job. He's one of the top assistants in the country. With a strong team and staff intact, Izzo could have his strongest squad in a decade. Bold claims, but at the same time, a bold squad to back it up for MSU. And with preseason game number one in the books, the Detroit Lions will return home to host the New York Jets in game two. The game will take place Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The Tigers took down the Indianapolis Colts 24-10 in their first game behind two touchdowns from rookie Kenny Galladay. The Jets beat the Tennessee Titans 7-3 in their first game last Saturday. A real snoozer. Hopefully a little bit more action when the Lions square off against the Jets. A thoroughly unwatchable three-game series of baseball ended Wednesday night in much the same fashion it began, with the Detroit Tigers getting beaten badly by the Texas Rangers 12-6. It was the Tigers' 10th loss in the past 12 games. Why am I telling you this? You already know that. It's because it just gets worse from here. The Tigers look to put that horrific series behind them and will begin a home series against the best team in the MLB, the Los Angeles Dodgers. The first game will take place tonight at 7:10 p.m. at Comerica Park. The Dodgers, of course, boasting the best record in the MLB, and they only bolstered their squad since the trade deadline. That should be another shocker for the Detroit Tigers, to keep it honest. NBA Finals MVP Kevin Durant said yesterday that he has no intention of making a visit to the White House when and if the Golden State Warriors make their way to the nation's capital on February 28th, telling ESPN he won't do that because he doesn't respect who's in office. Durant, who is currently in Washington as part of Kevin Durant Day in his hometown, said he fundamentally disagrees with President Donald Trump. Durant's decision to skip the White House visit means he's making a statement. Quote, I don't agree with what he's agrees with, so my voice is going to be heard by not doing that. That's just me personally, but I know guys well enough, they'll all agree with me. Although the Warriors have yet to be extended a formal invitation to the White House, Durant says he's willing to take a stand, even if it's just him, because of Trump's reaction to the Charlottesville, Virginia violence, which left one person dead and 13 injured, among other things, which also include what he feels has been a divisive presidency. We'll talk about that more later in another Athletes and Activism segment, something we like to document here on Current Sports, and I'll touch on that in my Reflection Friday. And last but not least, things are coming together at the new, horribly named, but cool, Little Caesars Arena. The Detroit Red Wings tweeted yesterday afternoon that the ice sheet is in place at Little Caesars Arena. Last weekend saw the ice taken out for the last time at Joe Louis Arena. The Wings play their first game at LCA on September 23rd when they host the Boston Bruins for the first of four home exhibition matches. The regular season opener is October 5th versus the Minnesota Wild. I might try to get out to that one, I have to tell you. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners, though. Call in 517-355-9527 to share whatever's on your mind of those topics and others in the sports world. But we got a busy show, two live guests. Let's get to it right now.
In Detroit, they're the one that dreamt this whole idea up of the octopus, so they get all the credit for it, or the blame, as some people call it, but mostly for fun, they dreamt it up, because back then it only took 8 games to win the Stanley Cup, so with the 8 tentacles, they were selling a lot of octopuses back then. They happened to bring one to a game, and they woofed it out on the ice, so that was a tradition that they have started, so give all the credit to the Cusmano brothers. Back in the early 90s, someone put one out on the ice, threw it out, and I went out there and picked that up. As I was walking off the ice, I kind of gave it a little twirl, and the fans started cheering.
The start of a new era. Al Sobotka, the same guy who's been doing it for years. He's the one that picks the octopi up whenever they fall on the ice. The former building operations manager of Joe Louis, and he'll retain that same role. Heading over to the new era in Little Caesars Arena, downtown Detroit. I can't wait to see it, but it is official now. The ice is laid down. The sponsorships are painted on. The Red Wings logo is painted on. It's probably a little bit chillier in there. You might need a jacket because the ice is down too in Little Caesars Arena. And to ceremoniously induct Little Caesars into Red Wings history, the construction workers, as well as Sobotka, had a little bit of fun yesterday. As the ice was laid down, one construction worker hauled an octopus into the arena and hurled it onto the ice, Sobotka ceremoniously picking it up, thus to christen the new Little Caesars Arena as the new home of the Detroit Red Wings. The Detroit Pistons, of course, will also play there. But things are getting set, as I mentioned, in the quick hit headliners. Not too long until the season, the first exhibition game for the Red Wings, just over a month away on September 23rd. The Boston Bruins will be in town. And then the regular season kicks off on October 5th against the Minnesota Wild. Should be a fun one, but that's just one of the coolest traditions in sports. I don't think a lot of people know how it started. I'm not a big hockey fan. As you all know, being from New Orleans, we don't have much ice sports down there. But at the same time, I've always known of the octopus tradition. And I didn't even know it was exclusively reserved to Detroit until I came up here or was started in Detroit. But in 1952, the Stanley Cup playoff round, the finals of that, as the Wings versus the Montreal Canadiens. Two games through, the Wings are up 2-0. Just classic stuff for one of the most successful hockey franchises in all of sports. That's the usual for them. But Detroit needed two more wins, of course, to capture its second Stanley Cup in 3 years, best of seven series, all of that. And the Cusmano brothers owned a local fish market in Detroit, and they noticed quite a peculiar similarity or a sign, some sort of symbol that they thought would help out the Red Wings. They saw that the octopus had eight tentacles. And back in that time, in 1952, you needed eight wins to capture a championship. So they thought that the eight arms were symbolic, and they thought that maybe through a bit of good luck and random occurrence, it could help the Red Wings win the championship. So they tried it. In 1952, Game 3 against the Montreal Canadiens, the Red Wings returning home with a 2-0 series lead. And right before the game started, they chucked an octopus from their food market onto the ice. And that spelled the Red Wings onto a 4-0 Stanley Cup series victory. And thus the story goes. After the octopus story spread and the Red Wings won that Stanley Cup, the Cusmano brothers, they became local heroes. And the Red Wings, as for them, they won two of the next three Stanley Cups, good for four in 6 years. A legend was born. The Red Wings, ever since, they've been throwing octopi onto the ice, and that's a tradition that will continue in Little Caesars Arena. Fast forward 65 years, and the Red Wings are now in their third stadium since that event, jumping from Olympia to Joe Louis, now to Little Caesars. And they tweeted yesterday that the ice sheet is in place at LCA. Again, last weekend, for the last time ever, the ice was taken out of Joe Louis Arena. And now it's official. The Red Wings will play in Little Caesars Arena. Something to look forward to. Again, the first game, September 23rd. That's an exhibition. The first game of the regular season, October 5th. Call in 517-355-9527. Again, I'm Isaac Constance filling in for Al Martin on the day. And I see we actually have a caller on the phone right now. It's Apache, one of our favorite callers. Apache, how's it going?
I'm doing good, Isaac. Big time now. That's good.
Not quite. Just while I was in L.A. He's the big timer.
Yeah, okay. If it's a coup d'etat, you got my support, man.
Appreciate it.
I got a question, a shocking question for you. But first, a little tidbit from Arnie Harwell. When I was a kid, I remember him telling the story as to why professional umps, when they clean off the diamond, What do you call that? It's called a diamond, right? Not the diamond.
Yeah,
the plate.
The plate.
The plate. Their behind always faces the pitcher. And he said the reason why that became a tradition was on a couple occasions, the umps got hit on the head.
Really?
With the pitcher throwing, warming up on the side.
Yeah.
So they started this tradition of, since you came up with that little story about the octopus, I thought I'd throw that in there.
Oh, I love that. There are so many different sports quirks. You could just fill it up for days. It's what makes sports great. Everything has its own idiosyncratic character in the sports world. That's what I love about it. Pachu, still there? Do we have him? Looks like Pachu got disconnected right there. But yeah, that's a great story. Ernie Harwell, another name that I knew before even coming up to Michigan. Ernie Harwell, of course, the legendary announcer for the Detroit Tigers back in the day. And my favorite, speaking of sports quirks, story about Ernie Harwell. I learned this recently. He used to always announce things, and I can't do his voice. I don't have quite the voice of Ernie Harwell. I know nothing actually close to it. But at the same time, whenever a ball was fouled off into the stands, Ernie Harwell would say something along the lines of, "And that ball was catched by a Muskegon man. Congratulations to him." Of course, he had no idea wherever the fan was from, but it was just a way he kept the game interesting. Baseball, we've covered this before. It can drag on sometimes. Ernie Harwell never let it drag on. He was full of entertainment. I think we have Apachu back on, if I'm not mistaken. Apachu, welcome back.
Because I was trying to figure out as a kid, how does he know? But that was very interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's my question. I was in a paint store the other day, and I ran into a fella and his girlfriend who were Coolidge Law students, and they had some Buckeye stuff on. Of course, I started teasing them, and they put me down. they talked about all the blowouts and how long it's been since we've beaten them. But anyway, he was telling me, this law student was telling me that there had just been a court decision where Ohio State could no longer refer to themselves as, what do they call them, scarlet and gray?
Really?
Because that color combination has been legally, I don't know if you call it copyrighted or trademarked, by a school in northern Michigan. And I don't know if it's a high school or college. I don't have a computer skills, so I haven't investigated it. But I was going to ask you if you could look that up. And Ohio State University has tried to buy the rights to use that phrase, but they wouldn't give it to them. So now they call themselves Ruby and something else. I forgot what the other color was for gray, which I thought was shocking because, occasionally that's going to slip from their mouth.
Oh, of course. So
could you look into that and let us know Monday what the legal case is on that?
I'll report back on that immediately, Apache. I did not hear about that. That's really interesting. It reminds me.
Shocked.
Yeah.
I think the decision came within the last week. I don't know, but I was absolutely shocked. I said, oh, my God, that's glorious.
Oh, a school with the firepower of Ohio State. Of course, Michigan fan. That adds a little bit of pleasure to your case, I'm sure. But that's shocking, just considering the fact that, of course, Michigan had a similar case when they switched sponsorship deals, I believe, to Adidas, and then they're back with Nike. But Maizen Blue was actually owned by Nike at the time, if I'm not mistaken. So Michigan, for a season, was trying to break away from that before eventually re-signing with Nike. But it's so complex and intricate how these sorts of jersey sponsorships and whatnot just get caught up in the legal process. It's all the time. The Red Wings, the Redskins as well, had their trademark scrapped for a while because of the name. So anybody could have sold a Red Wings shirt with the logo and everything. That's bizarre. That's interesting.
Well, to close, let me say this. I just find it ridiculous to regulate those color combinations because there's so few combinations. You're going to run out of color combinations,
Yeah.
So anyway, man, I heard you all week. You sound good. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Apachu. If you want to call in as well, you can call in at 517-355-9527. But that is odd. And obviously sponsorships and color schemes, they're all at a premium when it comes to college athletics. Purple and gold, that's pretty unusual. Blue and white, that's a normal one. But Scarlin Gray, that's individualistic. And I'm surprised that another school got to that, but that a high school is staving off Ohio State. I will certainly look into that, report back on Monday without a doubt, because that's a story that is definitely one that catches the eye for me. But a story that I did see, this was about a couple days ago, that I thought was interesting. And before we bring on our first guest, I want to briefly go over it. LeBron James, it's being reported that he's 100% leaving the Cavaliers next year, likely going to LA. NBA insider Chris Sheridan quoted an NBA source saying there was a 100% chance he goes. Chris Sheridan has a little bit of a reputation as reliable too, having been the guy who first reported LeBron's journey over to Miami, taking his talents to South Beach back in 2010. And Sheridan, now with his most recent report, is stirred a bit of news, including some backlash. Joe Vardon tweets out, "For what it's worth, three sources close to LeBron said this latest tweet about him is 100% false." And they say that no source close to LeBron would speak on his behalf in this matter. And then Alex Kennedy, a very reputable source as well and reputable journalist, said that LeBron camp is vehemently denying this report. That source is totally off, especially about the relationship between LeBron and ownership. Let's go through the LeBron saga and see how off this report might be, because personally, I trust it. And here's why. Because while there's plenty of speculation about what LeBron will do after this season, no matter what the reconstruction of this roster looks like or the height that rumors reach when it comes to Kyrie Irving leaving, LeBron is not waiving his no-trade clause for anybody at any point during the season, according to ESPN. Now, LeBron, of course, is one of three players in the NBA. You'd expect him to be in that echelon when it comes to players with no trade clauses, the other two being Dirk Nowitzki and Carmelo Anthony. James, his contract doesn't run out this next year. He has a player option, as many of the league's top players do, for $35.6 million. Of course, he's opting out, especially under the new rules of contract negotiations and the collective bargaining agreement. It makes sense that LeBron would want to hold off a little bit in terms of signing a new deal because, or I should say extending his current deal, because he can make a lot more. He can make Curry or James Harden numbers if he were to renegotiate with any team. But he could also test the waters of free agency as an unrestricted free agent, meaning he could go anywhere. LA, the LA Lakers, being the number one team that's being rumored. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski says that they're not giving up on the possibility of re-signing James next summer, but they're also not banking on it. They're not planning on James re-signing like they were when they threw all their chips into the center of the table for James in 2010. They thought he was coming back, and he, of course, took them by shock when he went down to Miami to team up with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. However, this time, they said they are not acting reactively. The Cavs, that is, will no longer act reactively. If James leaves, they'll be ready to rebuild. If James stays, great. But the Cavaliers are no longer trying to put every single asset up for grabs so that they can gather all the superstar talent around James. They're ready, if he leaves, to start from scratch. And that's a team that's not confident in returning the best player in the world. Now, of course, would they like James for another 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons? Heck yeah. Who wouldn't? That's why he'll be the highest paid free agent in NBA history to sign with another team when he eventually does. But the Cavs are treating his unwillingness to sign a long-term deal as something that's worth considering other options, including draft picks, trading him possibly, trading Kyrie, and stockpiling future players who could actually make an impact in 3 or 4 years' times. Now, here's the thing. LeBron knows how to play the media. So I don't think that it's a mistake that these reports were leaked. I don't think it's a mistake that his camp denied him. I think LeBron is orchestrating this. He's a puppeteer. Every single thing that has happened this offseason with the Cavaliers has had LeBron's influence, as did the firing of David Blatt, as did the firing of Mike Brown, a coach of the year. LeBron, every single season with every single team, has been the GM, the president, the coach. There's no mistaking that. But what few people realize is that he also directs the news cycle in full. Kyrie's camp, Kyrie Irving, the star teammate who hit the game-winning three-pointer on a step-back shot to his right over Steph Curry in last year's finals. Last year, I mean 2016, his camp thinks that LeBron leaked his trade request. And of course, we all know about the hour-long special, what has become the most infamous NBA free agency signing in sports history, or at least until Kevin Durant tried to one-up LeBron by going to Golden State. So LeBron knows what he's doing. Every single source, every single release that you hear about this issue is probably coming from somebody in LeBron's corner. Now, I want him to stay because I think if LeBron plays for three different teams over the course of his career and one team he plays for in two different time spans, it's hard to call him the greatest of all time. And of course, I think LeBron's a good player and an even a better person off the court, which I think should trump any sort of athletic concerns or greatness or legacy or anything like that. So I like LeBron for what he does in the community. But loyalty is non-existent in the NBA nowadays, aside from the occasional aberration, such as a Tim Duncan, or I wouldn't even call Kobe Bryant one, since he forced the trade to LA in the first place and threatened to leave if they didn't make a decision, him or Shaq. But in any case, there are very few one-team players anymore in the NBA. But even though the homecoming seemed like a dream come true for everyone in Cleveland and beyond, what a sweet, soppy story, huh? No time more so than 1 year ago when they were hoisting the Larry O'Brien Trophy for Cleveland the first time in 60 years, rekindling the greatest of all time barbershop debates. This was always destined to fail, y'all. And I blame the Cavs for shopping the first overall pick and the rights to Andrew Wiggins. They got Kevin Love in return, who LeBron had a riff with his first year, and now will probably be the remaining member of the Big Three once they get rid of Kyrie. But their future's gone. They're a winning team. They'll always have a good record, but they don't have any prospects anymore. They just signed Derrick Rose, for goodness sakes, and Jeff Green this offseason. LeBron fawned over Tristan Thompson and persuaded management to give him an $82 million contract over 5 years, which even in today's age of inflated paychecks is excessive. Thompson took all the air out of the finals this year, that's for sure, by posting unremarkable stat lines, or if you took note of them, remarkably bad. And suddenly, LeBron is stuck in a place that he can't get out of. He needs to call up you too. Because now he's in a point where he's all alone. He's isolated. Ownership doesn't trust him. His players don't trust him. The league doesn't trust LeBron anymore. And he was spoiled, just like any kid can be. He was spoiled to the point where this happened. He demanded the resignation of two good coaches in Mike Brown and David Blatt. He got them. He bumped shoulders with Eric Spoelstra. You know what punishment he got? Nothing. So when the moment came for the Cavs to finally make an independent decision, they were lost, without direction. They fired David Griffin, a great GM in the NBA, and LeBron didn't see it coming. So, what did he do? He pouted. In classic LeBron fashion, he pouted. He said he didn't expect it. And suddenly there were reports of him being disgruntled in Cleveland. But what I want to remind people about, and the reason I think this move to LA happens, is that this traces way, way, way back, further, all the way back to 2010. Not when LeBron decided to leave. Yeah, that was part of the buildup. That was distasteful, disloyal, short-sighted. But the acrimony in Cleveland's reactions soiled that relationship between the Cavs and LeBron permanently. Just to read a snippet before we get to our first guest of the day, James Edwards, Lansing State Journal high school sports reporter and contributor for The Athletic. Dan Gilbert wrote this. This is an owner, a billionaire of an NBA team. Dear Cleveland, all of Northeast Ohio and Cleveland Cavalier supporters, wherever you may be tonight, as you now know, our former hero, who grew up in the very region that he deserted this evening, is no longer a Cleveland Cavalier. This was announced with a several-day, narcissistic, self-promotional, build-up, cultivating, with a national TV special of his decision, in quotes, unlike anything ever, in quotes, witnessed in the history of sports and probably the history of entertainment. He goes on to call LeBron the self-titled former king. Boy, it's a lot of heat for an owner. So LeBron probably will leave. The thing is, this relationship has been gone from the get-go. And who can blame him for that? If you're not playing for a team you like, an organization you like, life's not that great, especially when you're competing with the Warriors. The Cavaliers are the most dysfunctional team to ever win a championship. Who tops them? You know, and like any family, they might bicker and fight, but usually there's not pandering, tattling, backstabbing, all as part of the ingredients to a championship-winning team, too. There's some level of honesty, or at least there should be, and the Cavaliers have none. So if you're blaming LeBron for this now, welcome to the party. You're 7 years late. There's so much blame to go around for why LeBron might leave Cleveland and probably will next offseason. And some falls on you, some falls on me for buying into the whole social media trend, watching the decision in the first place, because I know I watched the full hour and I was disappointed, but I watched the full hour and helped spoil LeBron to the point where he got this entitled. Some of it falls on Dan Gilbert and the Cavs, though. And whatever it is, LeBron will probably bail ship. But the Cavs are full of holes and they're sinking. This decision itself is not shocking, nor should it be. A homecoming was a nice thought, but that's it. So while LeBron came back, if he leaves, like I said, if you blame him now, welcome to the party. You're 7 years late. Call in 517-355-9527. We're going to hit our first break. After that, James Edwards of the Lansing State Journal and contributor for The Athletic will talk some Detroit Pistons with me, as well as what's going on in the Mid-Michigan area. And then following that, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, will also be in studio. Stay tuned for that and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin, who's out in beautiful Los Angeles right now, linking up with LeBron James, maybe hitting the links. Karina Garcia, I know you're a Los Angeles Lakers fan.
I am a Lakers fan.
Yeah, what do you think of these LeBron rumors?
To be honest, you know, I'm not a LeBron fan, but I
understand. You're a Kobe fan,
yeah,
which
Kobe all day,
I don't respect,
you know.
But okay.
But I mean, I understand. I mean, I think he just wants a more stable atmosphere. You know, it's been a lot of drama, and I think everything just started to hit him, and he's ready to go.
So much turbulence. Like I said, that has to be the most dysfunctional team to ever win a championship. But now we've got a team that's full of dysfunction that we'll be talking about, or at least recently, with James Edwards, Lansing State Journal high school sports writer, but we'll focus more on his contributions for The Athletic recently and the Detroit Pistons. James, how's it going?
Going good, man. Always good to hear from you. Always good to see you.
Oh, yeah. Great having you back in the studio. I think this is the second time, in fact.
I think so. And I just get here and I already heard Kobe slander from you.
Yeah.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got it.
Thank you.
No, we don't do it. Come on.
Thank you very much.
It's the Black Mamba. Kobe, we'll talk about this later. But he is overrated in a lot of people's books just because, like I said, there are all these myths. Talk about somebody who knows how to control the tide of the media.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant did that better than anybody.
No, he definitely did. And when you were talking about the most, what was the term used for the Cavaliers?
Dysfunctional?
Those Lakers teams are up there, too. Those late ones that won it, you'd have to say, just with the stuff with him and Kobe and Shaq. But I'll ride for the Black Mamba. I remember numerous games I've watched live where just are now are iconic moments. And I understand the slack and the flack he gets, but that's Kobe, man. Can't say that.
I feel you. Yeah, there's a certain level of reverence and respect that always goes along with the name of Kobe Bryant, but
I get it.
In my all-time list, Tim Duncan's higher and more loyal.
I agree with that.
And that's not an unusual opinion, I don't think. I think it's becoming more and more accepted as the history books will tell.
I agree with that 100%, but if I'm playing pickup, if Michael Jordan's not standing there and there's 50 of the greatest NBA players of all time, Kobe's number two for me. If I want to win.
Okay, in a pickup game?
I'll pass the ball to him all day.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
Now, James, I saw an article that you actually put out for The Athletic recently talking about Andre Drummond and his chronic problems with the Detroit Pistons. Explain that to me.
I mean, I think he's probably been one of the more frustrating guys for Pistons fans over these past couple of years. He's a guy that when you watch him play, you see every single physical tool you would want in a big man. Obviously, he's not one of those stretch five unicorn types like Porzingis or Anthony Davis or anything like that. But he's a guy that is agile on his feet, can jump, can move. It's with him is developing the rest of his game. I think people want to see him become a shot blocker. He hasn't become that. And I know he's young, but this is, what are we going into, year five or six for him? That's one thing that he's going to have to develop if he wants to stay, one, a focal point on a team, be a franchise-changing player. That's going to be a big thing for him. And knowing his limitations, he's obviously worked on his game around the rim, and I'll give him credit. I think his touch has gotten a lot better these past couple of years. But he's not a guy that should demand post touches and look to score the ball. And I think too often he seems to get frustrated when he doesn't get post touches. And he often forces up a lot of shots that are far away from the hoop, turnaround shots that he necessarily shouldn't be taking. I think until he realizes his own limitations, he's not going to reach his maximum potential as an NBA player.
Drummond plateaued, too. Correct me if I'm wrong, but probably in his third or fourth season in the NBA, I think he's entering his sixth this upcoming year. But it seems as if then he was the most agile in the post. He was more comfortable playing that rim protector role. Do you think that the small ball movement has hurt him and his development?
I don't know if that's what's necessarily hurt him. I'm sure it hasn't helped. But in terms of Van Gundy's offense, it's really no different than, I mean, it's tweaked a little bit than when he had Dwight Howard in Orlando. It's more with him just in those early years he had Greg Monroe. He wasn't expected to do as much. People know, obviously, Greg Monroe is not the player everybody thought he had the potential to be, but he's still one of the better low post scorers in the game. And when they were together, Monroe was scoring at will against a lot of guys, and Drummond didn't have to do much except get lobs. Now I feel like because he's the big guy, he's the face of the franchise, he's trying to live up to that. And you should see him following a more of a DeAndre Jordan type model. Just play within your limitations, be efficient, affect the game on defense, and that's how you maximize these type of guys nowadays.
And DeAndre Jordan, of course, has led the NBA in field goal percentage quite a few years now.
Right.
He's somebody who, with
Blake Griffin,
side by side, he finds a way to get the easy buckets, not necessarily ones that he doesn't have to work for, but he knows his place on the team. That's definitely something that Andre Drummond could refine. Now, building around Drummond and the rest of the team, the Pistons have obviously made a lot of offseason moves, drafting Luke Kennard, choosing to let Kentavious Caldwell-Pope walk.
Yeah.
He joined the Lakers on a one-year deal. And then trading for Avery Bradley, Marcus Morris, going the other way in that deal. Do you think it's been a successful offseason in terms of the project that Stan Van Gundy has wanted to build?
Successful, I think, well, that's a waiting game. I think he's made good moves. I think for what Van Gundy wants to do, he brought in the pieces that suit his style. Kennard, people know, is a knockdown shooter. I think in the summer league, he showed more. He showed that he can be more than that. Avery Bradley is an upgrade over KCP. I know he's a little bit older, but I don't put too much stock into that. He's still in his late 20s, but he's a guy that shoots the ball from three better than KCP. He's a little bit more, he's pretty much a lot more efficient than KCP. And I mean, we've heard it before. Kyrie Irving has said it, that that's the best defender that he's gone against. So KCP was a good defender. He is a good defender, but Avery Bradley is that next level. And if you can add some efficiency on offense at that position, I think that makes the Pistons a little bit more of a dangerous team.
We're talking with James Edwards, the Lansing State Journal prep sports reporter, as well as a contributor for The Athletic when it comes to the Detroit Pistons. James, when I look at this roster, I go through, I see Reggie Jackson, I see Avery Bradley, I see Ish Smith, and I see one player on the whole team that can pass.
Yeah.
Is that a problem for this upcoming year? It seems like they don't really have anybody to run the offense.
I think that is an issue. They have a bunch of ball stoppers from what we saw last year. A lot of guys that go and play a lot of one-on-one, and they don't really move how they should. Obviously, Reggie Jackson was hurt a lot of last year. Ish Smith did a really good job of moving the ball, and they had some success while he was there. But they're going to need a guy, and it's going to have to be Reggie Jackson. While he likes to create for himself, he's got to create for others. The Pistons have guys that can do things, and I think if Reggie Jackson can become more of a dynamic scorer and a more kind of fearful threat attacking the rim, I think it'll open things up. But we'll have to see. Obviously, he's had more time to kind of recover from that knee injury, and we'll see if he's back to the form he was before he was hurt.
Certainly. Now, we've seen a couple of drop-offs from prior promising Pistons players, such as Jackson, Drummond, and Stanley Johnson. Can those guys grow with the team this upcoming year, do you think? Or do you think it's time for the Pistons to look in a different direction?
Well, I'm sure they've been looking. There's been rumors around that they've been looking and shopping around Reggie and Andre. I'm not obviously sure how accurate that is. It seems like being a GM, I would think that you would look to do anything you can to better your team. Reggie and Andre, the Pistons are going to go as far as those guys take them. So it'll be interesting to see how Reggie comes back, like I said, from that injury, and if he can play to the form he was before he was hurt. If Andre can kind of accept his role, it's the nostril surgery. Maybe that helps him become more energetic. We'll see if that was a big thing. Stanley Johnson, I think this is a make or break year for him. He was really good as a rookie. Very good defensively, was able to play more of his natural position at the three. Last year he played at the two a lot when he was in, and I think it's going to be more interesting now to see how Stan uses him. It seems like he'll go back more to the three, but that's a guy that the Pistons are going to need to step up and play major minutes.
Stanley Johnson, of course, also at a position of need for the Pistons, I think, especially when you've got Tobias Harris, who's more of a tweener on that 3-4 position, so mismatched defensively no matter where he plays.
Yeah.
Stanley Johnson can be that X factor when it comes to defense, a great pairing possibly for Avery Bradley, but he's got ways to go. Now, last couple of questions for you, James, but the schedule was just released for the Pistons. I'm not sure if you've had time to peruse that just yet.
Yeah.
Is there a stretch or a game that you look forward to and think that it's going to be very important for the Pistons this upcoming season?
In terms of a stretch or a certain game, I haven't looked too deep into that. Obviously, you want to see the first games at home against Charlotte in the new Little Caesars Arena, so I think people are excited for that. I think the big thing to take away from the schedule is the back-to-backs. Pistons have less back-to-backs than they did last year, and I believe they had 17 last year, if I'm not mistaken, and they were at the bottom of the NBA in performance. I think they were like in the under 20% win percentage. They were not a good team on the last game of the back-to-backs. Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond both did not play well in those games. So lowering the back-to-backs is going to – we'll see if that's beneficial. I heard they still have a tough schedule when it comes to back-to-backs, but every team has to deal with it. And those two guys, if the Pistons want to go anywhere, they're going to need them to kind of to guide that way in the most critical moments.
Now, I'm seeing a question on our Facebook live stream, and we'll let you get going after that. We're speaking with James Edwards, sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal in high school sports, as well as contributor for The Athletic. Actually, it's from our host, Al Martin, who's out in L.A. right now, but I think he wants to know, The Athletic's still a pretty new publication.
Yeah.
How'd you get involved with that, and what can we expect in the future? Do you have any ideas for stories?
in terms, how did I get involved? I was in contact with the gentleman that runs it, Craig Custance. Many NHL people probably know him. He's a big, big name in sports media.
Spartan alum, too,
Spartan,
I think.
Spartan alum as well. Reached out. Both had mutual interest. So I freelanced a couple pieces for him. And in the future, yes, there will be stuff coming. You'll probably know more about that next week. So we'll talk about that. Hopefully you guys can have me back next week and we'll be able to get more into it.
Certainly. And The Athletic, I saw the piece you did on Andre Drummond, your first piece, and you brought up just so much. What was the theory that you brought up? Not cognitive dissonance, but it was something really in the weeds that I had to read up on.
The Malcolm Gladwell podcast. The name of the theory slips me right now, but it was a theory talking about, it was brought to the table by a famous, I'm trying to think of his name right now. That passes me too. Sorry, I've been a little crazy.
No.
But it's how guys are afraid to change until they see other people change. So it's kind of talking about Andre Drummond's free throws. That was terrible wording. If you read the piece on The Athletic, you'll be able to read more into it. But basically, it was talking about how Rick Barry tried to get Wilt Chamberlain to shoot underhand free throws. 1 year that Wilt Chamberlain did shoot underhand free throws, he had the best free throw percentage of his career. In that 100-point game, I think he hit 28 of 32 free throws. Before and after that, he was an abysmal free throw shooter. Rick Barry tried to get Shaq to adopt it. He didn't do it because, obviously, you've heard the thing. People don't want to get laughed at, made look like a fool. And Andre Drummond's one of those guys now, which probably should be time to start thinking about it. I know, obviously, it's a thing that people kind of shun for whatever reason, but it seems to be effective. And I just want to talk about how Andre has the abilities to change himself. Obviously, he would be the first person that we remember at that big of a stage to do the underhand free throw. So that's a choice if he wants to make it. But it just kind of talked about how people don't really like to change until they see a group of people change. They don't want to be an outcast. And Andre Drummond has to do something because those free throws aren't helping anybody. And then you see him in the Africa game over the summer. He missed his free throws there too. So it doesn't look like it's getting any better.
Pride.
Yeah.
That's simple. It's pride.
To.
You
that's
know?
What the, yeah. That's what the piece was about. Kind of him needing to swallow his pride and kind of understand what type of player he is.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much for coming on, James. We'll definitely get you on as the season progresses and nears for the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah.
James Edwards, Lansing State Journal high school sports writer and a contributor for The Athletic. Thanks so much.
I appreciate you, man. No more Kobe slander when I come up here.
I'm sorry. I just have to throw it in when I can. Next up, I actually want to invite Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts, onto the scene. We're going to forego our second break. Just 5 minutes left. Ray, I see you from Indiana. We're going to try to get you on as well, but obviously a little bit short on time right here. The Lansing Lugnuts entering their final stretch of the season. They've got a game tonight at home, and that should be pretty fun. Well, I think Thirsty Thursdays are done, unfortunately. Jesse,
they're done. They're over. By the way, Kobe, not so great.
Oh, you think so, too?
No, not a bit. I think he was great. I know better than to get on JE3's bad side.
Yeah.
No, Thirsty Thursdays are done, but we still have LAFQ fireworks left tonight, tomorrow night. We've got tonight is our family faith night. Tomorrow night is Harry Potter night. First 1,000 fans receive a Golden Snitch baseball.
Dang.
And then Solar Eclipse Day on Monday. We've got a lot of things going on.
Make sure to wear your glasses, I'm guessing, for
We're
that one.
Giving glasses. First 1,000 fans will have glasses handed to them. If you're coming late, bring your own.
Absolutely. Now, Jesse, obviously, this is a team that got a lot of play in the local media when it had Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., two big names in the Toronto Blue Jays farm system who have moved on to bigger things as well, moved up the ladder a little bit. What's the team done since then, and have you kept up with those guys at all?
Well, first, did you hear today's news from the Midwest League?
I did not.
Bo Bichette, Midwest League Most Valuable Player, Midwest League Prospect of the Year. Now, he just was injured earlier this week. He was running over first base, little mild sprain. He'll be just fine. He's been doing things with Dunedin. He's batting .344, crushing it.
Wow.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr., meanwhile, over this past month, is leading the Florida State League in virtually everything. He's once again drawing more walks than striking out. His batting average has been soaring upward, .378 in the month of August alone. So we've been keeping our eyes on those guys. At the same time, with these current Lansing Lugnuts, even without them, we've got some exciting players going on right now.
Who should fans look at if they go to a game this weekend or coming up?
I think starts with tonight. We've got a 22-year-old named Osman Gutierrez, who's been throwing 95 to 98 miles an hour, wipeout slider. Big time prospect who it's taken him time to put it together. He's put it together recently. I love it. That starting rotation for the Lugnuts has been phenomenal in terms of the major league talent that we could have, from Patrick Murphy to Osman to Jency Diaz and right on down. Watch the rotation, and at the back end of the bullpen, a little bit of a renaissance for our closer Jared Karkov, 35th round draft pick, major league sleeper.
Featured by our own Jacob Herbert, actually, on WKAR's website, which you can see by going to WKAR.org and scrolling down a little bit. Edward Olivares has been a stud for the Lugnuts this season. What makes him so effective?
For starters, he is whip thin, and yet he whips the baseball. He was the most powerful player on the team, led the team, and talking about led Bo, led Vlad, led everybody in home runs, and led them in all the other categories like stolen bases too. So he was the strongest. He was also the fastest. Great guy, only 21 years of age. He came in under the radar, and we started watching him, and we're going, no, this guy could be a major league star as well.
Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, play-by-play voice for the Lansing Lugnuts. The Lugnuts will play tonight, and it's Friday, meaning that Current Sports has a tradition of its own, but I think fireworks tonight as well against South Bend, of course.
Post-game Lafkew fireworks, and it's Family Faith Night tonight as well.
Definitely. Jesse, thanks so much for being on.
Isaac, thank you, my man.
Absolutely. Well, let's hit Reflection Friday to kick it off in the Current Sports way and send us into the weekend. Here it is. Nothing on it just yet, Karina? All right, we'll wait just a second on that. But I do want to express, on behalf of Current Sports, our sympathies to all those involved in Charlottesville as well as Barcelona. World's a scary place right now. It's hard to believe. I respect all the different athletes, no matter what side they're on, taking a stand. We've touched on this before, but as a person involved in big-name spotlight athletics, it's your responsibility and your obligation to go above and beyond, serve as a role model for your community, and so much more. And I respect guys like LeBron James, like Kevin Durant, who are now taking a stand and realizing that this is greater than sports. Whether you side on the right or the left, no matter what side, what you think is right, you've got to do this. You have an obligation as a sports fan to manage, and as a sports player, to manage to transcend athletics and bring it to something far greater. I commend all of those people. And again, on behalf of Current Sports, I want to express my sympathies to Charlottesville and Barcelona, the victims of those two attacks. You've been listening to WKAR's Current Sports on AM 870 and 94.5 FM. Isaac Constance right here. Al Martin will be back on Monday. Thanks for listening.